Hello and welcome to this week's episode of The Boundless Show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, and here in the studio with my friends, Mott, Steve, and Candace.
Hey, Lisa.
Yo, yo.
No Ted Lisa. Today. Hello. We have a great show for you today. We are going to actually be talking in a roundtable about the miracle of Facebook and how it has changed all of our lives, right up there with sliced bread and
noxzema.
Prepackaged cheese slices.
Sure. So we will talk about that. That should be a fascinating discussion. We also have in the studio today Brandon Heath, who is the new artist of the year in GMA circles. So we'll be chatting with him about his new album as well as his burgeoning career. John Thomas is back with us for the Hungry Years. And finally, Candace and I will be back here for the Inbox with a question about merging
money,
everything.
Money, 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 money.
Prior to marriage.
Yeah.
What is and
money.
What isn't appropriate. Okay, you're breaking out the song.
Lisa, you inspire me.
Aw, I know. Well, speaking of inspiration, we all attempt to have inspiration to exercise, don't we all? But who, show of hands, because this is an audio show, who is actually exercising
right
consistently
right now? Yeah.
And do you include walking to the studio?
I would say no.
No. Okay.
Taking the
nor
stairs
to the vending machines.
Elevator.
Taking the trash out.
Carrying a 23-pound little one up and downstairs.
Well, Lisa, I used to have a pretty regular exercise routine until my treadmill broke 2 weeks ago. And I feel helpless. I feel paralyzed. And I'm definitely getting fatter.
Because you can't run outside,
yeah,
Mott.
Because you can't.
I can't.
Especially in beautiful weather like this.
Or in a beautiful state. I mean, you can't run along
mountains.
I'll tell you why. Because it's too hard.
What are
running
you
on the pavement is just too
difficult. It's like... It's like those weights. I mean, have you tried to lift weights?
They're too heavy.
Those things are heavy.
I know.
I mean, it's crazy.
Well, the thing about running outside is you have to actually deal with hills.
Hills?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and like deer here in Colorado, that's what I'd always run into.
Literally.
You know, our treadmill, I actually got quite a bit of good use out of it in our basement. We are finishing our basement, so we've got stuff moved all around the house, and the only place we could find for a treadmill was in our bedroom. And for one thing, I mean, aesthetically, it's just not, it's not with it. But
no.
I've been on it maybe twice. And
the kids are liking it because it's like conveyor belt time and they get all their toys.
Right. Oh, they love it to see those fly, the toys fly off the back. But I thought at first it was going to be cool because we positioned it so that it was looking out at Pikes Peak and the whole Front Range in Colorado, which is beautiful. But if you try to run on the treadmill while looking out the window, you get this dancing effect of everything in the window just bouncing up and down. And I was getting vertigo and had to, had to give that up.
It's a good thing you stopped, honey.
So, I mean, that 10 pounds of extra weight is much better than watching Pike's Peak dance in your eyes while you're...
Yeah, but those are sympathy pounds. I mean, my legitimate and highly acceptable excuse is that ever since I got so pregnant, it just became really difficult to run on the treadmill.
Well, and, you know, we just are thankful that the doctor actually prescribed that during her pregnancy she needs to eat as much bunny tracks as she can.
Steve, why don't you use the
Did he also
facility?
Prescribe that for you?
That Thanks for interrupting, Lisa. Now, Steve, why don't you use the facility here at Focus on the Family?
Oh, we have a facility.
Yeah. We have an exercise room with equipment.
I used that one time.
Treadmill.
I think a few years ago. Now, I don't like the whole packing everything up and showering at work and the whole missing your lunchtime when you should be consuming calories to actually be burning calories.
I don't like working out with other people.
They have to watch
other
you.
People are weird.
I don't know. There's something. It's like watching people eat. I can't watch somebody eat. It's just disgusting.
What do you do at family dinner time? You close your eyes?
I turn away.
No, it's like going back to high school and being in the gym, surrounded by these people, and you're thinking, these people never leave the gym. These people have, you know, like these 30-inch diameter biceps.
Not the people here at Focus.
Oh, no.
All right, now let's just... We all sound like we're very anti-exercise.
No, we are for it. We are technically for it.
We live in one of the fittest states in the union, Colorado.
I think it's the fittest. Actually, I think Colorado Springs is the fittest, according to Men's Health magazine.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, okay, so repeatedly show up in those lists as a healthy place to live. We presumably eat healthy. And I have a lot of bike paths and trails and things, so it makes it easier. I will say that when I am not large with child, I do try to get on the treadmill 2 to 3 times a week. And it's not the intensity of the gym membership workouts that we've obviously all just sort of discounted. We can't afford it anyway. But I just think it's important to do something regularly. You know,
well,
you don't have to kill yourself
even,
and you don't have to be...
Even beyond exercise and health, I mean, it always just clears your head so nicely to be able to give you, when you got all these things that you're processing, to be able to... To run it off. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just feels like it changes your perspective.
Well,
it's
and I get my best
reliever.
Blog ideas,
absolutely.
You know, on the treadmill or article ideas. Or, I mean, where do you think we get the content for the show, if not on the treadmill? Lisa,
like
you haven't said anything.
I don't like those people at the gym that are just like the thin little rails of women who are always like, I just need to be out here to like relieve stress and stuff, you know, so they're always
like, they like it.
What's wrong with that?
Like they're just doing it to relieve stress. But no, then they're on the elliptical going like -5 miles an hour and they're just like, just like in a little cute outfit or something for like 10 minutes and then they get off and like get a drink of water and go home. Like that is so ridiculous.
It's just not fair. You're jealous.
Well, I'm jealous and it's just ridiculous. And I'm sure it's just a stumbling block to the men.
Lisa, do you feel a pressure to perform?
I just feel
elliptical.
No, generally, no. Now with the iPod has revolutionized my life with being able to just put that on when I'm doing cardio. But I've tried to do more. Like I just think machines are lame. So I've started doing classes. Well, when I'm not doing, we have a thing here in Colorado. Have you guys done the incline? Have you ever done that?
We've heard of it.
No. Okay. I've heard of it.
I know
well, there's
a lot of
the thing called the incline here. That's a mile of railroad ties up the base of Pikes Peak. And you go up, and it's horrible, and it's never fun. You can do it with a group of people, but you don't talk to each other.
Because it's so hard?
Yeah. Literally, like in the midsection, it's so... the space in between ties is so huge. You have no strides. You're like scrambling over pipes, like big old pipes and stuff like that. And I think it's at one point it's like a 65% grade or something. So yeah, it's crazy. But doing stuff like that or hiking or whatever. And but then some classes, like I did spinning all winter and then they canceled it over the summer. And then now there's a salsa class that I take at the Y.
Could you describe spinning? I don't think I know that.
Spinning is like cycling indoors.
Stationary bike.
Okay. Yeah, but it's not really a stationary bike. It's actually more of it's a simulated, like a real bike. So a stationary bike, whereas you know, if you stop pedaling it, it's just going to like spin, you know, whatever. This actually, you feel like you're really on a real bike. But you do it with an instructor, and then he calls out different calls to you, so you have to increase your tension. So it simulates a real ride.
It's intense. I did it once with my sister.
Really?
I did not think I would make it to the end. I thought I would fall off the bike.
It's good.
It's hard.
Yeah, it's fun, though. You increase your intensity, and then you increase your speed, and then you he says, out of the saddle, and so you have to get out, you know.
Then you're like, standing up, sitting down, going fast, going tense. It's crazy.
It's good. Yeah. So, but now my coworker and I started a weightlifting program, so we are going hardcore with that, which we do meet twice a week in the morning before work at 5:40 in the morning. At the Y, and then get ready for work, which is totally oppressive. And then once after work on Wednesdays. So it's hardcore.
Well, those
but
classes have to be better than those machines on the infomercials. And I'm thinking, you know, some of these infomercials, the whole reason they bought a 30-minute slot or whatever is because it takes you until the 29th minute to feel like you could potentially put yourself in the position that some of these machines get you in because they look so ridiculous. I mean, you look at some of those and it looks like some space test.
What was that one machine? It was like a combination of a rowing bike or a, what was that called?
It wasn't
a bike because you didn't pedal. You just pushed with your feet and the arm things came up and down. And so
it's
really
almost
bizarre.
Like the stupider you look, it's supposed to assume that you're getting a better workout.
Suzanne Summers.
Well, I saw on my last flight in the flight magazine, I saw this machine that you can buy for
$14,000. Yes, and it's 1 minute?
This one was 4 minutes.
4 minutes.
Yeah, you pay $14,000, and for 4 minutes a day, you will totally be buff. So
if you want to, guys, if you want to contribute to the Lisa Totally Buff
machine
fund. They
said that it totally
fund.
Works, so I don't know about that. Which I believe, you know, more so than my brother-in-law bought the abdominizer for my sister, which is like this battery pack thing that you strap around your abdomen and it's supposed to emit these like sound waves or something, and then you're supposed to lose the abdomen fat.
And get cancer at the same time.
I was born in Tennessee, late July humidity. Doctor said I was lucky to be alive.
I've been troubled since the day that I got here. Troubled to the day that I disappear. That'll be the day that I finally get it right. There is hope for me, yeah. Because God won't forget all the plans He's made for me. I have to wait and see. He's not finished with me yet. He's not finished with me yet.
Well, we hope that by now you have befriended Boundless on Facebook, those of you who are on Facebook.
I hope not, Lisa, because we only have 216 friends.
Oh,
that would
really?
Mean we'd get a pretty small,
yeah. Boundless only has 216?
Yeah, isn't that lame?
That is lame.
People.
We need more friends.
This
people.
Is the week.
Yeah, I think this is the time to request Boundless. Although I did have someone come up to me or find me on my page or something and say, I can't find the Boundless, you know, page or whatever. So I don't know why that is, because usually
just
if I search
Boundless.
It, it's the first thing that comes up. Anyway.
It's B-O-U-N-D.
Right, not B-O-W.
It's not B-O-W, right.
Yes, find the page. Put it on your Outlook calendar this week as a to-do. But we are all on Facebook, right?
Yes.
How? What
Barely.
Did you guys to get on Facebook? I know, Matza love it. Do you even have a photo up
I'm
now,
not
or are you still the
shadowy figure?
Shadowy
figure. Only 29 friends.
Photo up.
I think I've commented on.
Oh, so it must be
two walls.
Your wife has a site there.
I am.
Because you do have pictures on
that. My wife
site.
Is an aficionado.
Oh, okay.
Yesterday you said
I'm
addict.
An amateur. No. No, she's not an addict. She used to be.
Oh, okay.
Might at least you're not like the poor people on Facebook who only have one friend and it says Mott Brown has one friends.
Well, no, they used to have their account jointly. They used to be the Browns.
Yeah, that's
until
that's
obviously
she kicked me off because I wasn't contributing anything.
She's like, I'm so over you. Get your own page.
We had all these friends who chimed in with us because Candace put her page on first when she was promoting her book. And then I added one. And then we finally became friends with each other. And so all these people got a big kick out of it that said, Steve and Candace are now married because they all got the update.
No, Steve and Candace are now friends.
Or are now friends. But then we updated our status of how we are friends.
Yeah.
And everybody was so excited to realize after 10 years of being together, we had finally got married in the eyes of Facebook.
And Beth wrote on my wall that we are married because I had all these single girls hitting on me.
That's because there's no picture.
All 29 of them.
Yeah, exactly. No picture.
An
exotic name, Mott.
Wow.
Only they're in there. They think it's French, Motte.
Yeah.
Okay, so what do you guys use Facebook for? Like, why are you even on it?
Because every day, 18 people who I don't know want to be my friend.
Okay, I'm jealous.
I know.
I get like one a week.
All
I do is respond to friend requests and little green patch request and
save the planet.
And what is all this stuff? It's like high school. I mean, am I the only one who looks at this and thinks, okay, this is maybe a little too involved?
Well, I think you're pointing out how different generations view Facebook.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure I don't look at it the same way as the 20-something or late teen or whatever.
Right.
That's pretty much a given.
How many causes can you really join? How many groups and
how many color ribbons are there? All right, people.
What about Flair? My wife has a great Flair board.
Oh,
Flair
I didn't know is what cool. that is.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's like the
it's like
the
your
buttons.
Personality.
It's like, you know, did you see Office Space?
Office Space.
Where Jennifer Aniston has to wear the Flair in the restaurant job.
Yeah, I didn't
and they're like, you're going to need some more Flair. So it's basically like buttons and they're
it's
very
a TGI
quirky.
Friday type
okay.
of.
Yeah. It's very like quirky. It shows off your personality because you can make your own flair.
Okay.
Hello, we have Boundless Flair. I made some Boundless Flair, and a couple of other readers and listeners have made flair. So find the Boundless Flair.
And our engineer Dave has tons of flair, right, Dave?
He is so popular.
He's like all flair all the time.
All flair all the time.
You should see him right now.
Okay, but we need to not flatter ourselves because most of the requests that we get for any kind of application are just because you're obligated to invite people to be part of that application in order for you to add it. So you may just be a name
it's
in
not
the box.
You.
That they,
it's
you're,
not it's you.
You're being used.
Yes. They don't care whether you want to add the little green patch. They just need to add eight friends, or they need to invite eight friends in order for them
to get it.
To get it. So
is this I like a multi-level marketing scheme? Is there...
It's like Amway.
it's the new Amway.
Is somebody sitting on top of the 100 million members just making bank because
of... that guy who's like 22 who started it.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, but so here's what I wanted to talk about, and this is people using Facebook to be up in people's business when you don't need to be in their business. And quite frankly, you don't even care about them because you don't know them that well. But now you know that they like have an infection.
What the heck are you talking about?
I think it's
self-evident. Because people put as their status updates, you know,
Who reads those?
Lisa. Everyone. Like, that's how you follow up on everyone. It's like, you know, John...
So if I've never updated my status...
He's on antibiotics. I mean, like, depending on what they have.
So if, you know? I don't even know how to update my status. I've never done it.
Oh, well, yeah. Well,
and you have a boss who updates his like every half a minute, right?
A what? My boss? Yeah. Well, he is... He's crazy. Yeah. My boss here at Focus is a VP and sends me... Which America's Next Top Model are you? Quizzes. Like, I mean...
Lisa's boss, who shall remain nameless.
He is totally awesome, but he is he has a Facebook page for his cat, people, okay, that he maintains.
You know, no, Facebook to me is a quick way to find a missing email address. If I've lost your email address, I can look you up on Facebook and send you a message that way. And the other thing that I think it's nice for is that I'm hearing from some friends from high school I haven't heard from in a long time. And I hope that, you know,
but
it's...
You hear from them once and then they disappear.
But that's okay because who in their life at 38 has time to reignite friendships that have been dormant for 20 years?
Because you've made new friends. You're putting friends on top of friends on top of friends, and I can't take it.
It's like soil layers, right?
You know? I mean, it's like stirring up all these soil layers that used to be sedentary.
What if you had to start exercising with them, what would you do?
What?
What if you had to start exercising with them? You wouldn't be able to do it, would you? Maybe you could do it virtually, like on Facebook. But yeah, no, I mean, people are just
up in
everyone's
business.
I'm sure
there's going to be a wee Facebook combo thing.
Lisa, I am not
in
your business.
No, you're not.
I don't.
No, but you can go through, like, you can sort through your friends and just go to status updates and read, like, down 50 status updates and find out what 50 people are doing at any moment in time.
So that's why you were late to the show today.
Well, I didn't check my Facebook this morning yet, but...
Well, you know, that whole question, though, about you mentioning your bosses on Facebook, and there's all this debate about... the profile you give, knowing that you could have a boss or a colleague or a client or people even applying to colleges and wanting to date people, this whole sense of you never know who's going to be looking at your profile or kids and their parents and all this kind of stuff. And a lot of people just draw the line at that and say, you know, I'm not going to friend my boss. I'm not going to friend a family member. And
it's a footprint.
Yeah.
Aren't they saying now that employers are looking at potential employees' Facebook?
Oh, and they said college admissions boards are looking at applicants' Facebook pages.
Mm-hmm. Be careful.
You can totally stalk people via Facebook and find out a lot about them.
You know, one of the most interesting things I read was in this magazine called The New Atlantis that likes to look at kind of what's going on behind technological advances. And they were saying that art historians used to study self-portraits because self-portraits always... represented what was most important to people. Whoever would take the time to commission this painting with them with a big bronze horse in the background, or, you know, they try to cram every piece of something valuable in the background. And they said, you don't have as many self-portraits commissioned today because we have Facebook, and Facebook becomes our self-portrait. And it's all the things we're trying to cram in to say, this is who I am.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah. Well, it's funny because I actually... So I started dating this guy at church and we finally changed on our Facebook pages the relationship status. So it says we're in a relationship. And I am just going to say that there are a lot of Boundless listeners that posted on my wall or sent me messages saying, oh, great. Like, now who's going to be the single voice on the show? You guys are going to have to get someone else, whatever. Okay, people, we are not married. And let's just get some perspective here. But I have literally, and I think that's where you get into the whole too much information thing, I have found out about people's engagements via Facebook. I mean, and it's kind of that I'm actually going to speak at a women's conference in Kansas City in October. And my topic, I'm going to do a workshop on the importance of real relationships still for women, because so many women are conducting these relationships on Facebook where you're just, you know, you're playing Scrabulous with someone on Facebook online, or you're, you know, whatever, doing a cross stitch with them. You know, it's just totally bizarre. And like, no one, you know, and just the importance of mentorship and how women still need women in their lives and stuff like that. But
yeah.
But it's weird. It's like important life decisions are being shared on Facebook.
It's a catch-all. It's a form of communication. I mean, sharing your engagement isn't so bad because there are people who are sort of on the fringe of your sphere of relationships, and it's good to let them know what you're doing.
Well, and you know, some people don't even send Christmas cards anymore. They just do a Facebook update.
He says, as he told me last night, that the Christmas card budget is going to go into the basement.
Just send a piece of Christmas flair to everyone and have them post it on their board.
Well, and that's one of the things about technology is that just because you can doesn't necessarily mean you should. There's a lot of technology that makes a variety of things possible, even though, you know, might not be the best thing to do. This same article was talking about the study recently that said even though people may have 200, 300 friends on Facebook, the number of people they can actually count on if they had a car breakdown or if they had a death in the family or some serious need has actually dropped in half over the past 30 years. And so that need to live in the real life and to still have face-to-face relationships is even more important in a world where you can be lulled into thinking, my 300 friends on Facebook are going to carry me through the tough spots.
Mm-hmm. Well, it just reminds me of in junior high when, you know, in class, your entire self-worth was determined by how many notes you received during class and from whom, you know, and in what manner they were folded.
Or especially Valentine's Day when you had the big...
Oh, yeah, totally. Well, that was Valentine's just a big tear fest for most people. I mean, but yeah, it was just like, oh, so-and-so sent me a note and it was like folded like the, you know... origami, whatever. And we're still doing it only via Facebook. So, okay, well, speaking of which, so we have action items for people this week. Befriend Mott because he has 29 friends.
No.
And no, seriously, we're going to dump you from this round table if you don't get more popular.
Well, okay.
So put up a picture for crying out loud.
we only want popular people here. So do that and make sure you add Boundless as a friend. I finally did it, although I think Ted had to send me a request because I hadn't added Boundless yet. And find our flair and, you know, maybe reach out. Maybe we can reach out to one another in the Boundless community.
And get to know our engineer, Dave Sockout.
And get to know Dave as well, because, because sometimes he'll be online and you can just like IM him and be like, Dave, you're so awesome. And he would love that. So, but no, tell us your stories of Facebook. And I've enjoyed getting to know some of the Boundless folks on there. You know, I always stalk them. I look on their page and I'm like, are these people even believers? No, I'm just kidding. I just judge them. But no, I've gotten like super encouraging notes from people, so it's great.
That's because they love you.
I'm all for it. No, they're BFF.
You're down, all the way down. Can't shake the feeling. You've tried, you learn how to hide. You've got your reasons. I bet you're full of regret.
Joining us in the studio for this week's culture segment, I have Brandon Heath, CCM recording artist and Nashville native, I guess. That
right.
is correct. Welcome, Brandon.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I'm a little bit intimidated by your name because that sounds kind of stage-ish. Is that real or what's going on with that?
Brandon Heath sounds mm-hmm. stage-ish to you?
It does. It sounds like you kind of made it up. I mean, you're not like Bill Jones or something.
Right. Well, I guess it's a good point because there's never really been a famous Brandon. Not that I can think of.
Mm-hmm.
There was a guard in hockey, Brandon Waugh, but that's the only one that I've ever heard of.
Okay.
My middle name is Heath.
Oh, okay.
So I actually did. It is a little staged.
It is. Okay.
Should I tell my last name?
Have you
name?
Ever revealed that before? Because that's just, we may need to write a press release on that.
I know.
That's
people are going to think that my whole life is built on a foundation of lies.
Mm-hmm.
No, you know, it's funny because some friends of mine and I were on the road in 2000 and we were joking about what our stage names would be. You know, how you, like mm-hmm. you pick the first street that you lived on or, you know, your first dog and... So we were coming up with some crazy stage names, but I said, no, really, I've been thinking about using my middle name, mm-hmm. you know? And so one of the dudes in the front seat said, why don't we flip a coin? So we flipped a coin, and that night when I showed up, I was Brandon Heath.
Wow.
Yeah. I'll tell you my last name. Do you want to know my last name?
I do, kind of.
It's I was going to make up something really crazy, but it's Nell. It's K-N-E-L-L.
Okay.
So people have trouble with the silent K sometimes.
What is that? What's the ethnicity on that?
It's German.
Okay.
Knell would be the correct pronunciation, so I've been told. But the meaning of Nell is the death toll of a bell.
Right.
So that's about as morbid as you can get.
Right. So maybe that was a good move to go with the Heath.
Right.
So, yeah. Well, my stage name is Lisa Anderson, and that's also my real one.
Awesome.
But I'm thinking we'll probably have to, since we are skyrocketing in popularity, I'm going to have to come up with something.
Just a one name.
Yeah.
You should do like a share.
I want to be like Blaze. We'll have to look into that, Matt. Let's see if there's any legalities involved in that. All right. Well, now that Brandon has chatted for a while, let me actually tell you who he is. I did say that he is a recording artist. He was actually the Gospel Music Association 2008 New Artist of the Year. Congrats on that.
Thanks.
His wildly popular first album. And that's been out, almost 2 years now?
Yeah, it came out September of 06.
Okay. And tell us about that. Give us the title.
Right.
That.
Don't Get Comfortable is the title of the first record.
Okay. That contained the single that many people are familiar with, I'm Not Who I Was. And Mott actually was mentioning this morning that he loves the song. So that's very exciting.
Awesome.
Now he actually can put the artist to the song name, which is fantastic. The new album is titled What If We, and it just came out. The new single off of that, Give Me Your Eyes, is already playing on radio, so you may have heard that already. So you've got a lot going on.
It's been a good summer so far. Yeah,
that's pretty awesome. You're busy. You're also touring with Sarah Groves and others as part of the Art Music Justice Tour, so that's pretty exciting. I was looking at your tour schedule. I noticed you're in Texas right now, mostly.
Yes,
in the next
That,
but moving on, going up Texas to Maine, I think you're. So that's just kind of whoa.
You know what's funny about Maine is that it's actually the last state that I've never visited.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
So I've been to every state except for Maine. So Maine's going to be my last state to visit in the U.S.
Well, and the five Christians who live there
are
super friendly. So they're
really
gonna
excited to come to the show.
They are going to come to your show and think it is fantastic. So, tell me a little bit, Brandon, about you really starting out in the music biz. I know you probably get that question all the time, but it's a good one just to let our listeners know.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people say that they do music, and a lot of people say that they're musical, and maybe that's a little bit subjective. But you actually have made a career of it. So how did that come about?
Well, I grew up in Nashville, actually, as a native, and it's funny because even in high school, I didn't realize how impactful the music business is around the world. You know, I knew radio, obviously. I grew up actually listening to pop radio, so I wasn't a big country fan at all. But my parents were, and would torture us a lot of times by making us listen to country music. But when I got into high school, I got into Garth Brooks, you know, and a couple other Brooks and Dunn, and some Vince Gill, I think, was another big influence of mine when I was first starting to learn how to play the guitar.
Sure.
And so I went to this place called the Bluebird Cafe, and it's actually 4 blocks from where I grew up, but I had no idea what that place was.
Hmm.
I mean, you were talking about a little, like, unassuming strip mall. But it's this venue for live music for songwriters, and I happened to go in there one night, and that's when I decided that's what I want to do. I want to be a songwriter. I had been playing guitar for only a couple of years at that point. I learned when I was 15, I think it was 8th grade, so maybe it was 14, but I learned how to play and took about 2 months of lessons, and then I wrote all the way through college, just, you know, practicing my songwriting, and joined a couple of clubs there, and then would play around locally, but also played in Young Life, which is Young Life is an outreach to high school kids, which is actually how I became a Christian.
Mm-hmm.
So
headquartered here in Colorado Springs.
Headquartered here in the Springs, so you guys are neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
But that was really my first audience. And I remembered thinking, maybe I should be an artist and not just a songwriter, you know, because I was doing a lot of the singing and not just the writing.
Mm-hmm.
But my spirituality played a big part in that creative process. So for me, it just seemed natural to write about God and to write about my relationship and even like redemption and forgiveness and the themes that come along with being a Christian, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's really how I started. And just happened, I was in a men's Bible study with my producer and he was like, man, we got to do a record together. Next thing you know, we got a record deal and here we are.
Wow. So kind of getting a little more specific on that. So you felt, I mean, was it one of those situations where you sat down and you said, you know, I have some pretty solid things to share. This is a way in which I can do that. Similar to how, you know, a writer of a, you know, a published book would do.
Right.
You just chose to do it through music.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, music is such a big part of my life anyways, because I listen to music all the time. And, you know, I think it has this ability to get under your skin like a lot of things can't, you know? There's something about music that inherently has the ability to move people. And I'm moved by it and inspired by it. So if you can write a song, you know, plant a good message in a good melody or in good recording, I think that people will really be affected by that. And that's what's unique about music, is that it reaches, I think, a larger audience than just maybe a speaker would.
Now, why do you think, for example, I'm Not Who I was a number one single and has held, you know, obviously is still popular. Why do you think that resonated so much with audiences?
Well, it had a good beat.
And you could dance to it.
Exactly. No, you know, for me, I think, and what I was surprised about is how honest I could be when I was writing commercially,
because
you think you don't want to be too raw and too, you know, in your face and awkward, you know, but you know, the song is about forgiving somebody that I haven't seen in a long time. And so for me, I wrote it like it was a letter. And, and what I tell people often when they're, you know, if they're asking questions about songwriting, just write it like you would speak it, you know, like you would be in a conversation with somebody. Cause I like just being casual, and you know, I can be entertaining on stage, but for the most part, I want there to be a genuine experience at a live concert. And so if you can share your stories and either through song or through speaking, I think people really will connect. And, I think maybe what worked about I'm Not Who I Was is people made that song their own song,
because
it fits with so many stories. And, I think That's what makes a great song, is when somebody can say, you know what, that's my story, that's my song, it belongs to me, you know.
Wow. Now you, beyond the music, you actually are pretty passionate about living life, I think, with authenticity. You shared a little bit in some of your stuff about living in a poor neighborhood in Nashville, and you know, really now you've taken up some causes and have gotten involved in some stuff that is addressing world relief and beyond. How do you, we actually just did a show where we talked about social justice and kind of the wave of young evangelicals who are on that bandwagon, in light, especially in light of the upcoming election. And how do you still address those kinds of things with authenticity and make it, do you get criticism of you're just in this for the sexy cause?
Right.
You know, how do you do that as an artist?
It does seem kind of like the popular thing to connect yourself to a cause. But for me, it all depends on our own experience and, you know, where at some time did we see something that was greater than ourselves, you know? I honestly have to look at what my calling is and what your calling is, and that's to love your neighbor. And that's something that I'm really trying to figure out. What does that look like? Because one of the greatest questions ever asked in the Bible is, who is my neighbor? And the answer is, you know, everybody, like everybody around us, people that we have never met in Africa are our neighbor. So I really genuinely take that to heart. So I want to know who those people are, but you won't know them unless you go see them. So in 2005, for the first time, I actually visited a third world country. And, you know, it seems like the hip thing to do, you know, you don't want to look at, you know, third world countries as being a tourist spot. And that's absolutely not what it was when I landed there. You know, I thought it would be cool and exotic, but man, my first night being, I went to India. Hmm. I went to southern India, and I got off the plane, and the smells and the humidity and the culture and the language, it was all a little bit much for me, and I got a really sore stomach that night. Hmm. And I remember going to bed, and I feel like I've only heard the voice of God once, and it was that night. And he said, I brought you this far, and I can't do anything with you unless you trust me. Hmm. And I knew immediately that my stomach ache was just coming from not trusting and being anxious. So God used that week and a half to show me what the needs of the poor are, and what the poor really looks like. You know, because we have poverty here in the U.S., but not like in places like Asia and in Africa. So that was the beginning. I saw a little girl standing outside of a brothel in a city not too far from Madras. And it really, once you see that for yourself, you can't avoid it anymore, you know? And if I'm going to love my neighbor, I'm going to need to be a voice for them and to tell other people, this is really happening. We have a very powerful government. So if we can, you know, I love that. Just a few weeks ago, I called my congressman and just talked about a few things that were on my heart. And I love the fact as an American that you can do that. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't actually talk to my congressman, but I talked to his secretary. But I love that we live in a place where you can voice your opinion and form petitions, and you know your voice is heard here. Mm-hmm. So, as Americans, as believers, as human beings, I think that we need to be a voice for the voiceless. Mm-hmm. And that's why I've put myself behind social injustice and human trafficking.
Hmm. Well, and I think that's great. And I think that, you know, what you've also said in the past is just how you are trying to affect wherever you are, even here in the U.S., and you try to live, you know, authentically, I think, among people that you have within your own community and whatnot. And I think, you know, it reminds me just the story of the Good Samaritan is that he was on the road, you know, mm-hmm. and as he saw the man in need, and it wasn't like he went and did this stint of helping, you know, he's like, this is my 1 week a year where I'm going to help people. And then the rest of my life is mine. It's a matter of expending yourself and mm-hmm. Using margin wherever you can to help those as you are going mm-hmm. where you are. So what is something... What's kind of maybe a goal that you have for your life, whether that would be in, you know, 1 year, 5 years, whatever, something that God will really have to be in? What are you dreaming big about as far as either your ministry or your life in general?
You know, as far as music, I'm this is one of those things, and even in a time where the music industry is so turbulent, you know, and so unpredictable, we're all trying to figure out how to remain in commerce with this thing. So I don't think about that too often because then I get stressed out, you know. I just rather just keep doing it and being creative, and I think God will bless it. It doesn't matter, you know, what problems face it, you know, commercially. But honestly, as you were asking me that question, I don't know that I've made any real tangible goals for myself lately. I feel like I'm living out one of my biggest goals, and that's just to risk. Mm-hmm. A little bit more. And, you know, being an artist is risky because you put yourself out there every day. You know, I'm putting myself out there right now. For a long time, I wanted to be a songwriter and just write the songs and other people could go do the hard work. But I think there's usually bigger payoffs and bigger risks. And so for me, there's another level of that. And it comes from really trusting that God is in control of your destiny, of your fate. And, you know, whether that means that, you know, I'm going to die next year, or it means that I have to quit music, or it means that I am going to be wildly successful, whatever that means. I want to live a life of spontaneity, and I always want to be free enough, if God is calling me to do something, that nothing will hold me back. And that really is my biggest goal in life, is that I would always live a life of spontaneity, that, and even whoever I marry, you know, and my kids would be open-minded enough that we could go where God leads us to go. Because I think ultimately that's why we're here anyways, you know. But as, you know, as Americans, as you know, worried human beings as we innately are sometimes, we don't have the freedom to do those things because we make goals for ourselves, you know, because we make plans. And those aren't bad things, but I don't know. My priority is to be available to do whatever God wants me to do.
Okay. So you are, you alluded to this, you are single. So there are CCM artists that, you know, are,
there
which
is.
I'm sure is tricky being on the road and all that.
Uh-huh.
So what is your current support structure? Like, who are you closest to, and what's kind of your structure of mentorship and accountability, and who's important to you?
Yeah. Well, Nashville, you know, I've lived there most of my life, all my life, basically. I have a group of guys that I met with before I moved away, and we'll get to that in a second. I moved to Texas about a year ago. But in Nashville, there's a group of artists, but also just young professionals, you know. Some of us are married and some of us are single. But we get together at least once a week, and we talk about vulnerability. You know, as men, that's something that is kind of a new concept, because we're not really taught to be vulnerable and to make mistakes, you know, and to admit to, you know, addiction or sin or, for me, especially in Nashville, there's a lot of fronts, there's a lot of images to uphold. And so when I was given the permission to not have an image and, a reputation, I think that's when I started living a lot more freely, you know, among people and not feeling so competitive all the time. So I found this group of guys mainly. Actually, we were co-ed for a while, and we all dated each other, and then that didn't work out. So
okay.
So there was one couple that got married out of that co-ed situation, but we decided to keep it, you know, just we separated the genders.
Hey, you gave it a shot, which the Boundless Show, we give you props for that.
Awesome. We gave it a shot.
We support that. Okay.
Do you know what the scripture that was that we studied?
No, what was it?
1 Corinthians 13.
Oh, okay.
Love
Excellent.
Never fails.
Yeah. If I speak in the tongues of men and of angels.
It was a great study. Mm-hmm. And thankfully we were going through that, learning what love is. But it was such a great lesson, because it's not so much about romantic love. It's about, you know, if we are to love the world, this is how we're supposed to do it. This is what it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what it doesn't look like. And
mm-hmm.
So anyway, those are the guys that I keep in contact with. They know everything about me. I have two best friends in Nashville that I roomed with. And they were the closest guys to me. A guy named Matt Wirtz, who's actually also a performer, a secular artist. And Rusty Goodsell. And the three of us, we have stayed up late praying for our wives, you know, and I'm happy and honored to say 2 weeks ago, Rusty got married finally.
Yay.
So he's
yay, Rusty.
Yay, Rusty. It's so funny, you know, that period between when one of your friends gets married and, like, you don't want to call them too soon because they're on their honeymoon. That's where we are right now. I haven't called him because I don't want to, like, interrupt, you know, so...
you could at least text him.
I totally could. Right.
I'm sure you have your special ringtone and all that. So.
Yeah, you're right. Well,
hello, boundaries.
I'm not asking for details. I want to know that he's doing well, and I'm just proud of him. So
that's awesome.
Those are the guys that I keep up with. But you know, also in Texas, I moved there a year ago to lead worship, actually, and which was, by the way, not part of my 5-year plan
okay.
to lead worship.
Uh-huh.
But there was a church down there in the Woodlands just north of Houston, and they had the audacity to ask me if I'd come and be their worship leader. And I'm not a worship leader. Like, if you listen to my music, it's not like mm-hmm. worship music. Mm-hmm. But there was something about it. It was what I was talking about earlier. Like, I felt like I was being called to it, even though it doesn't look like the traditional trajectory of a new artist, you know? It may seem to a lot of people as somewhat of a distraction, but for me, it's being more grounded. And it also gave me the opportunity to live somewhere else besides Nashville, because I've lived in Nashville my entire life. So So Houston is where I call home now, and I've got some great people down there too who I stay in community with. But the dating life is always a little challenging because I'm always gone. I'm just so inconsistent, you know?
I thought you were going to say, because I just can't find anyone in Houston. It's
too small. No, I wasn't going to say that.
Actually, then I would have had to rebuke you.
Yeah.
That's one of my gifts, FYI.
Well, so. Yeah. I'm so far enough good. Away from you, you can't slap
but
my
you're
hand.
You're traveling.
I will
okay.
say this. I moved. One of the reasons I moved to Houston, though, is because the people are just great. Mm-hmm. Texans are, they are so hospitable, and they dream big, you know? I think that's the other reason why I like this church is, because they asked me, a new artist, if I'd come and be their worship leader. Mm-hmm. I like that they just went out and said it, you
yeah.
know? They had the bravery to do it, so.
That's great.
So I said yes, and it's been great.
That's super. Who would you say are some, and, you know, I'm sure you get this question a lot, but, you know, just on your iPod, who do you listen to, Christian and non?
Right now I'm listening to the new Coldplay. That's such a stock answer, but the record is so good. Have mm-hmm. you heard the new record yet?
I haven't. Not yet.
It's Viva La Vida is the name of it. It's
okay.
So good. One of my favorite artists is...
But I like Gwyneth Paltrow as an actress.
Oh, you do like Gwyneth.
So that's my connection.
Right.
Okay.
I listen to a guy named Magnet.
Okay.
And he's out of the UK, I think. But he produces his own stuff. And he writes his own stuff. He's got the coolest voice. So Magnet, check him out. Tourniquet is the record that I would recommend
okay.
of his. And I love Glenn Hansard and, I always forget the girls' names. Did you see the movie Once?
I didn't, no.
You need to see the movie Once.
Okay, I've heard about it.
You need to
I've
see it.
It's
about, it's an Irish guy, Glenn
okay.
Hansard. Plays this guy who is playing on the streets and
and she's like a classical musician or
yeah
okay.
exactly kind of classically trained on the piano but they meet because she brings her vacuum cleaner to him. She wants him to fix her vacuum cleaner.
Okay.
Anyway, they have a record. The soundtrack to Once is good, but also they have a record called The Swell Season that I've been wearing out this summer. Also, my final recommendation for the summer is there is a record put out by Derek Webb and Sandra McCracken called Ampersand.
Mm-hmm.
Derek Webb and Sandra McCracken are married.
Mm-hmm.
Derek Webb, formerly of Caveman's Call.
Right.
This record is such a great summertime record, and I'm on tour with them both this fall, so
aww.
Had to. I'm really, really looking forward to this tour. And
that's
so,
awesome.
Yeah.
We have been chatting with Brandon Heath. The new album is What If We. It is just out. You definitely want to check it out. You can find out more about Brandon at brandonheath.net. You can also find more about him at boundless.org because we will be chatting about him. Obviously, we are mentioning him in the post related to this podcast. So that's super. Hopefully we can have you back at some time when
be
you're not just
back.
Out and about leading worship.
I'm
and
coming
doing
back in,
tours
in January, actually, to this area. So I'm going to get a little skiing in and then maybe just drop by and see how you guys are doing.
Oh, good. Yeah, well, say hi to us here at Focus on the Family, Christian
absolutely.
Disneyland.
All
so,
right.
all right. Thanks for being here, Brandon.
Thanks for having me.
Rain come down to except for the bump on my head, I'm feeling alright. Dancing to our favorite tune, I pulled you in way too soon. Bang went the drums, we went yeah.
let's welcome John Thomas back for this week's edition of The Hungry Years.
It was the first day of the first semester of my freshman year of college, and I stood in the middle of my dorm room with the phone to my ear. With one step in any direction, I could touch any of the pale yellow cinder block walls. There must be some kind of mistake, I told the unsympathetic voice in the university residence department. I've been assigned to a dorm room with two other people. There are three of us assigned to a two-person dorm room. I wasn't exactly sure what I expected, but at least I wanted my own bed. I asked the lady on the phone for another place to live, and thus began a pursuit which continues to this day for permanent housing. Next was a one-bedroom duplex on Garland Street, an easy walk to my new campus, and more importantly, only a couple of blocks from Mr. Berger. Location, location, location. The floor plan was rectangular, like a wide hallway that transitioned from one room to the next. You started in the living room, then proceeded through French doors to the bedroom, then down a short hallway with the bathroom on the right, then suddenly you arrived in the kitchen. I had only one roommate at 600 Garland Street, and I had my own bed. Now, the main problem with duplexes is that they make you think you have your own place, but don't be fooled by the two mailing addresses. It is one house, and you are sharing it with whoever is living at 600 and a half Garland Street. And if they like listening to Pat Metheny at full volume well past midnight, well, you're going to listen as well. After graduation, I decided it was time to invest. I took the step and became a homeowner. Well, a mobile homeowner, anyway. I bought a used two-bedroom, two-bathroom, eight-wheel house trailer. Well, except for the wheels and the Naugahyde padded countertop, it was very much like the duplex. 12 feet wide, 22 feet long, cold, leaky, and paper-thin walls. But it was mine. And it was the first place since leaving home that had some permanence to it, although the wheels did diminish that effect. For all the jokes about Southerners living in house trailers, I can only say that this one served me well, and I sold it a few years later and broke even on the deal, which is more than I can say for anything I've ever rented. From there, it was another couple of apartments, nothing nearly as colorful and interesting as the mobile home, nor as sound of an investment. I did make a significant shift in the mid-90s when, after getting married, I quit renting apartments and rented a house. This is when I discovered that true permanence is to some degree measured by if you must mow and water your own lawn. I was now a caretaker of land, doing the whole by-the-sweat-of-your-brow thing. I knew I was getting closer to permanent housing, but I still wasn't there. I was only a sharecropper. Finally, my wife and I saved enough money to put down a deposit, and we bought a house without wheels. A cute little place in suburbia, situated a few inches from the next-door neighbor's cute little place, and on it goes for miles and miles. If anything should feel permanent, this should. A mortgage with my name on it, a lawn to mow, no landlord to call for repairs, and no wheels. Yet I'm restless. I'm still looking for something more. Another bedroom, maybe? Maybe a bigger kitchen? What is it? Maybe I'm trying to find that home where I grew up, the last place I remember where things were simple, where I felt secure, and I might add, where I had much less responsibility. Or could it be that what I'm looking for can't be found here? Could it be that I'm longing for some other permanence? The home for which God has placed a hunger in my soul that calls to me, keeping me unsettled, dissatisfied, that place that seems always to be just beyond my reach. My temptation is to keep looking backwards at that place or those places, those shadows of home that seem to best pacify my longing, forgetting that the dissatisfaction remained there as well, maybe less so, but always there. No, looking back is fine, but home is ahead of me, and it isn't another bedroom or more backyard or even fewer wheels that will make it finally the permanence I'm looking for. Rather, it'll be in keeping company with Christ, the one who has prepared that place for me. In his presence, I'll be home. Then I'm gonna move you in.
I am back in the studio with Candace for this week's Boundless Inbox. Hey, Candace.
Lisa, it's always a pleasure to be here for the Inbox.
Yeah,
we get some good
here.
Questions from all you people out there listening.
We do. And we didn't work out in between segments, but we're going to just tackle this question and then go. And what did we say? We're going to run 20 miles?
It may take me a long time. I'm
we'll
running
run
really, really
20
slow
miles
these days.
And Candace will have her baby, and then we'll tell you about it on Facebook.
There you go.
Okay, well, this question is from one of our listeners. She is actually from New York. How do you say it? Frania?
I think so.
Okay, yeah. Awesome. All right, and she says, I have been in a relationship for about 4 years. We're both Christians, but everything seems to be wrong. I really believe that God wants us to be together. But I have so many questions that I do not know where to go. I know in marriage, what is yours is mine, but how does it work when you're not married, but plan to get married soon? As far as money goes, my relationship has been through so much because of finances, and we are not living together or married or any of the above. He has had a hard life, and his family comes to him for money sometimes when he does not have much to give, but he gives anyway. Then he's in a bind with his bills, and he comes to me. What do I do? Is it right to give? Is it right not to give? What does God think about this? Am I hurting him more than helping him when I give him money for bills or to help his family out of binds? I find myself resenting him a bit because I feel like every time I have $100, something else happens and he's asking me for money again. I don't know what to do. He tells me that as his woman, I'm supposed to help him. Is this true?
This is a great question, primarily because money is such a huge issue for married couples. And we hear from so many married couples at Focus who are struggling in their relationship because of disagreements over money. So I think you can just start out by thanking the Lord that in his sovereignty, he's allowing you to address this issue now before you're married. And you should address it now. This is a very serious issue. To my mind, it's a huge red flag. And to answer you quickly, you are hurting him and you are hurting yourself. This is a very bad precedent that you've set because you're acting married and you're not. If you were sleeping together, I'd say stop sleeping together. But you are presuming a role of wife and equal partner in this financial relationship that the relationship itself doesn't warrant. So you need to first pull back and stop feeling a responsibility to bail him out of financial binds. One, because you're not married yet. You're just really a sister in the Lord. And so he shouldn't be coming to you and asking for more financial support from you than he would any other woman in your church. But two, you should also stop enabling him and emasculating him, which is really what you're doing. When he runs out of money, instead of saying, wow, I'm sorry, honey, that really is tough and I'll pray for you. And, you know, maybe next time you shouldn't be so quick to loan money to your family. Maybe you could talk to them about ways that they could get their financial house in order. Every time you bail him out so that he can bail them out, you're really removing any impetus for him to be a provider. And so I think this is a good time for you to start allowing the circumstances to go where they will based on the decisions he makes so that you can observe how he handles the financial pressure. Will he be able to be a husband to you and a provider for you? And should you have children for your children? 1 Timothy 5:8 says, if anyone does not provide for his relatives, and especially for his immediate family, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. You know, he might say, oh, but I am providing for my family. But I don't think what he's doing is providing for them. He's borrowing for them. And that's not the same thing. He's going into debt for them. And that is not something Scripture asks him to do. So he is acting in an unbiblical way, and you are really enabling him to do that. And so as difficult as it may seem initially, I think the best thing you can do is start saying no to the requests for cash. And again, encourage him, tell him you'll pray for him, and offer to do a financial stewardship course together, whether it's the Crown Ministries class through your church or you know, getting the latest Dave Ramsey book and reading about how to live within your means. This is a great opportunity for the two of you to walk through a hardship that does end up putting a lot of marriages in the tank. And so don't wait. Let's come back to that issue, though, too, of marriage. You've been together for 4 years, and you say that you know God wants you to be together. And I'm just curious, how? How do you know that? What evidence do you have? Because it sounds to me like it's a fairly unhealthy relationship. And so I would encourage you, in addition to taking a class together or reading a financial stewardship book together, to get some mentoring and ask some of these hard questions now. This is not a healthy pattern. As you know, it sounds like he's got a bigger heart than he has wallet. And you know, while that's okay every once in a while to make a loan to a family member, it's really not a great way to run a spreadsheet or a balance sheet. And it's going to break the budget. It's going to be trouble long term if you guys don't figure this out now.
Mm-hmm. And it just seems to me that the underlying issue here, like when he says, you know, he tells me that as his woman, I'm supposed to help. Well, they've been in a relationship for 4 years, but they're not married. I mean, she's not
really his woman. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
and so he's asking more of her than he has asked of her, because he hasn't asked her to be his wife, but she's giving more than she should be. So it's both of them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thanks, Candace, for weighing in on this. I think that will be helpful for Frania and for others. So as always, we want to hear your questions. We have two ways for you to get them to us at this point. Write to us at editor@boundless.org or leave us a voicemail at 1-866-687-8686. Again, that's 1-866-687-8686. Give us your questions, your concerns, your comments on this or other inbox questions that we've addressed in the past. We will probably, maybe, use them on a future show. So we need to keep Candace busy.
That's right.
So she can keep the, you know, keep her mind off of pregnancy, her final stretch.
Send me those hard questions.
Maybe it'll prompt labor. We'll see.
That's right.
See if you can be the question that sends Candace into labor. So, all right. Well, that is it for this week's edition of The Boundless Show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson. As always, we'll be back here next week as we address more issues that are affecting young adults today. We want you to be a part of that experience and that discussion. So stay around, and we will see you next week.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org, focus on the family.